file comes from the Blue Orchard Bee. We ask you to respect the copyright of this file, which belongs to the Charlotte Mason Institute, Andres Smith and Danielle Merritt Sanseri. The file is for personal use only. You may share with family, friends, and colleagues, but do not publish the material in any format, including in any electronic format, such as website, blogs, or otherwise, without permission from the Charlotte Mason Institute, Andres Smith, or Danielle Merritt Sanseri. Please note the views expressed in these files do not necessarily reflect the views of the Charlotte Mason Institute, Andres Smith, or Danielle Merritt Sanseri. It is important that you remember that information provided on this file is not intended to represent or to be construed or received as professional advice in matters of mental health. You are encouraged to work closely with a licensed mental health provider that fits your needs. Glad you are with us this week. Don't forget the CMI Charlotte Mason Educational Conference coming soon. Our very own Danielle is in charge of the neurodiverse sessions for this conference. This week, Danielle interviews Molly Gribble about her story of educating her child with neurodiverse needs. Let's listen to their discussion.
Joining us today on the Blue Orchard Bee. Today I have the pleasure of welcoming Molly from our pollinator community. Molly has so kindly offered to share some of her Mason journey with us so that we can continue to fill out this diverse and colorful picture of what the method looks like in our neurodiverse settings. So hi, Molly.
Hey.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your expectation was when your child reached school age? Did you have ideas about what learning was going to look like for him or what kind of challenges he was going to have? Did you enter a Mason paradigm knowing that you were going to have to make some adjustments?
When he was school age, he went to school. So he started in preschool and went to kindergarten and first and second grade, and he always did really well. So I had three kids at the time and was pregnant with the fourth by then. And I just didn't worry about school very much. I kind of just let things go as they went. And I remember when I was in school, my parents were the same way. Like, as long as I never got bad grades. So I was pretty much sort of ignored in school and I just did my thing. And Sam kind of just did his thing. I was mostly about making sure he played outside before we ever started Charlotte Mason. And a lot of the things that are part of the Charlotte Mason education, we did those things naturally, just playing outside, doing crafts, being in nature and reading aloud a lot. So I think I sort of had some of that underlying because of all the child development stuff I had taken in school. I had a pretty good understanding of what I need to be doing at home, but what was happening at school as he got older, I don't know, it just started to bug me because I saw what they were doing as far as bribing the kids. They were always coming home with toys, and I noticed Sam in particular, he's a master gamer of systems, so he could just pretty much play them like a fiddle. So he was doing that a lot. And I didn't know if that was necessarily a good thing to be teaching him. I didn't like it. But anyway, I was just kind of like, well, that's just the way it is. And at home, we can do things a little differently. But that was it. So he started to have anxiety in school when they put in this advanced class that was for the smart kids, I guess. He was scoring off the charts, 98th and 99th percentile and stuff. And so I wanted him to be able to do that, but what I didn't realize was like they were just going to take him and like destroy his love of learning, basically, like by giving him tons of extra busy work. And some of this stuff was fine, like they would play little coding games and stuff, but he was not doing well. Like he was starting to like melt down before school, he would always get anxious, like because I didn't like put a lot of pressure on him to do his homework, he would wait till the last minute and then like he would be scrambling before school and stuff like that. So he did have a lot of anxiety around that situation. And one teacher in particular was, for some reason, with Sam in particular, like when he doesn't get along with somebody, it's like it can be bad. Like if he perceives that someone isn't being nice, like he has a really strong sense of justice. So anyways, we pulled him out of school, and I know Cindy from college, Cindy Swicegood, who works at the Alvieri, and I was trying to find a curriculum to use and I was sort of lost. And I had seen her post about some stuff about the Willow Tree School. So I was like, well, we'll try this. And I talked to her and it sounded like good for us because at the time, we had looked at like classical conversations, but I was starting to get really concerned about kind of that branch of evangelicalism as well, and not very comfortable with some of the stuff that I was seeing and reading. So we just chose the Alvieri and I decided to go to the conference. So when I started, I think I was really idealistic about how much we could do. Like we would be fine just doing everything, but you know, morning work was okay with him. He could do most of it, but the handwriting stuff immediately was like, I was like, what has been going on at school? Because basically what I discovered was he was completely let loose at school. Like nobody gave him any instruction basically in handwriting. It was just like, sit down, do your handwriting. And he was doing letters. I mean, he's left-handed, so he was doing letters backwards, and I don't even know if it's backwards. And, you know, even the Alvieri curriculum, their handwriting curriculum is very straightforward, and I felt like this will be fine, and it would have been just fine for Mary, but it wasn't designed for a left-handed person. Once I started reading up about it, I was like, oh, this isn't actually going to work because of the way basically the way it was designed. I don't know a ton about it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I changed him to a different handwriting curriculum and kind of like had to lower my expectation about that. So at the time, I've kind of put off getting him help just because I thought, oh, maybe I'll be able to do this. Maybe it'll be fine. And he has improved a lot under like my helping him through school. But this year we decided to do OT because I noticed, and I've noticed since he was younger, that he has these like lagging motor skills, kind of like, just, I hate to compare my kids, but like when he's beside his sister, like she's 8 and he's 2 years older, and it's really different. And so I've always noticed that, but then I also think she's more ahead of her age, so it was hard for me to tell, but he definitely has some motor skill issues, which I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's related to like the dysgraphia, because he was diagnosed with dysgraphia, and I read that that's related to ADHD. So anyways, we had to like not do the handwriting curriculum, which was fine. It was just one little piece. What did I say next about him? I changed so much stuff with him. Like, I don't know.
So it's interesting hearing the overlap. There are so many overlaps. I know so many people with dysgraphia who are on the spectrum as well. And, you know, of course we talk a lot about, you know, ADHD and overlapping with the spectrum and all of those kinds of things. So it's really interesting to hear you talk about things that sound so familiar to me with him, and because our family has a lot of, you know, everybody's kind of got a different mixture of things going on. So I know that you mentioned about books, that he's got a particular taste in books.
Yes.
So has he, go ahead.
He likes, okay. The poetry was a bit hard too, because it's almost too serious, because you know, people with ADHD like to joke a lot, like sometimes too much, but like to cover up for other things. But he loves like Shel Silverstein and like Roald Dahl, those dark sort of off-center poems. So we've switched that up a lot, not just those poets, but that kind of allowing him to do some of those recitations that are a bit more entertaining to him, like really helps him, because otherwise he'll just sit there and just blah 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 want want want. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
it's interesting to see how they you know, the whole attitude, the whole demeanor changes with different you know, the tone of different books and how they're sitting with them. It's so obvious on them. They don't fake it well.
They don't. And you know what, I did have to learn a big lesson about this. And this goes back to your question about expectations of a Charlotte Mason education and on and on. Well, there's this whole thing about twaddle in Charlotte Mason education, and Sam loves twaddle. I got to be honest with you, like, or what people would think of as twaddle. He loves Diary of the Wimpy Kid, you know, Henry Winkler. He loves Big Nate. So some stuff like that. He'll read Minecraft books. And at first I was like, especially with the Wimpy Kid, I was like, I don't really know if this is quality like literature. So I was kind of snobbish about it. But what I realized was I just wasn't really valuing his interests, you know? And by me, as well-meaning as I was, by me saying that to him or kind of looking down on what he liked, it wasn't valuing his personhood either. And so that was my mistake in the beginning, but I got over it. Like, I figured out for myself that, you know, he's going to read this stuff. But this is also the child who I was like, where is Sam the other day? And he read the entire, like, unabridged Tom Sawyer in the basement by himself, and then went out in the yard and like pretend played the whole thing out. Like, he was busy, and but he can still pick out a good book. Like, it's like it doesn't stop him. Mm-hmm. He reads a lot of, like, he just the sheer amount of stuff he reads, it's like I can't keep up with him.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good point about these kids who are just not, like, they don't fit this traditional mold. They just need a lot of freedom to choose stuff they like. And I've started kind of like sitting with him and doing some of the things that he likes and reading some of the stuff he likes. And some of that stuff is actually really funny and clever. And I didn't even and wouldn't have known it had I not taken the time to just sit down and just, you know, what are you into? Like, mm-hmm. Might not be what I'm into, but. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just valuing their interests, I think, is really important. And that was just a lesson I had to learn. I know Charlotte Mason meant well, but I don't even know if what she was talking about is the kind of stuff that we might even call twaddle. Like, I'm sure that there are some things that I'd be like, yeah, this is just ridiculous and silly, but I don't really know what the literary kind of thing was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have wondered too with some of the things that some of us in the community would consider twaddle. Some of it, I think, is you know, we've talked a lot recently, and I know you and I have been part of some of the same conversations about being more inclusive. And mm-hmm. some of what we would call twaddle, I feel like, is they're books that are inclusive of children who are neuroatypical, right? Like those, the characters in those books a lot of times are characters that reflect who they are. So yeah, I think we have to be careful and think about what is it that they're seeing in those books? What's it doing?
Well, yeah, you know how Amber says windows and mirrors, like those books are mirrors for them. And I can tell you right now that the Diary of the Wimpy Kid has ADHD and so does Big Nate. And they're always getting in trouble at school. And those books are actually calling out the establishment in a very subversive and funny way that we just miss because we're like, that's twaddle, mm-hmm. you know? But it's actually, it kind of reminds me, not on the same literary level, but like, you know what Roald Dahl does in his books is he's actually calling out all the adults that are being like horrible to the kids. And if you go back and read those books as adults, you're like, oh no, am I becoming this adult? Like, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about, okay, I'm hearing a lot of the things that you're doing that are working better for Sam now. Mm-hmm. So tell me about some of the things that you tried first that didn't work and how you kind of changed your mindset and your strategy so that you could move to a place where you're honoring him more.
Okay, so some things just didn't work. Like he just hasn't been interested in at all. Like he likes to go outside and he'll play outside, but he says he does not want to go on a walk for no purpose. Like, I don't know. He doesn't really like nature walks, even though he goes outside. I guess he's going on nature walks, but he doesn't want to go and journal about it later. It's like, I don't have time for that. So we really haven't addressed that, except I can say that if you have a kid like that, when they have nature study or natural history, if you just like say, go outside, find this thing and draw it in your journal, it's a lot more, it's like that counts as your narration. And they might actually do it. Whereas some of these open-ended, let's go on a nature walk and pick something. It's just not, it's not working. I don't know what I'm doing, but that's one area we really haven't figured out. Another one was brush drawing. He hated that like so badly. So we did it for a while and I was like, oh, this isn't going well. So I let him stop. And then I think at the time, now that I think back, it was the time I started collaborating with them more and kind of starting to incorporate that into, you know, if you don't really like something, let's talk about it and let's try to change these things. And so I let him take a break from brush drawing and he would do something else, like do this other drawing thing. But he came back to it later. And he's made a ton of progress now, but it really took me backing off and letting him kind of, I think it was probably related to some other struggles he had with his handwriting. Mm-hmm. It was tedious, like in the same way. And it's almost like if he writes more than like two or three sentences, you start to see it in his eyes. Like he gets like crazy eyes, like, and he gets really stressed out. It must be brain overload. Like it's such an effort just to write three sentences, you know? Mm-hmm. So that kind of dovetailed into the other thing we had to change was the expectation of dictation and copy work. Because I really can't dictate to him at all because he can just memorize the amount that he can write. So if all he can write right now at a time is three sentences, he just memorizes what the dictation is as he's studying it. So I don't even have to dictate it to him because it's so short. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But he's gone from like two sentences, you know, which was really hard. And now he's up to three, not long sentences, but three just basic sentences when he's doing that. And that's what he can do. And I'm just like not even looking at the curriculum for what the expectation is for him anymore because I'm like, whatever it is, it's not gonna happen anyway. So we'll just stick where we are and do what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I would have to write a lot for him in math too when we were doing Right Start. because Right Start, there was a lot of drawing board activities as well, which was that would take days and days to get through those. I would actually have to do a little bit of it and skip forward several lessons, like keep working on the lessons, because he would get so slowed down just from drawing board stuff. And then, I don't know, Right Start seems to work fine for my other kids, but for Sam, it was like tapping your foot, like, come on, let's go, because these games are so tedious because you have to set them up. It was too much boredom, like the process of getting. I even like Right Start, but like the games kind of drive me crazy too, because I'm like, can we just do it already? And he was kind of experiencing that too, like he just needed a little bit faster pace. So
He reminds me, I'm hearing so much that reminds me a lot of one of mine. So that's really interesting. I'm wondering how much is the dysgraphia, how broadly that impacts them, and connects to all these other areas and impacts so many areas of schooling.
It's like touching on handwriting, brush drawing, nature journaling, math, drawing board, Sloyd, handicrafts, all those things are hard for a person who has dysgraphia. And you know what else is hard? Is like rhythm, clapping, games. Though that's gotten a lot better. He's doing some kind of interactive metronome. I don't even know what this is, but at OT, supposedly he's getting better. But I don't know if that's related to dysgraphia or what. I really don't know. But yeah, I think it's a huge challenge. And I imagine like in school, they have to write quite a bit. So that might've been why he was so stressed out, because there's so many workbooks. Like with a Charlotte Mason education, like there's a lot of strengths for these kids too, because we can be so flexible. Mm-hmm. And we can, you know, if the kid can't read, we can read to them. And if they can't write, we can write for them. Or like give them supports. Like there's a lot of room for us to bring in other supports. Like one thing we've done for narration is we get creative. Like we'll make videos, you know, narrate to the pets. Like he does voice narration because he has a phone and he'll voice, or an iPad, and he'll voice narrate to me that way. Do Legos, whatever. There's a lot of ways to narrate, and you don't have to get them to write all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know that.
Do you have anything else you'd like to share about Sam in particular?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of wonder about him and like the whole anxiety thing and ADHD. Like it seems like I'm hearing more and more about that. Maybe that's like an overlapping thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you have any experience with your own kids. And
we have a lot of anxiety in our house.
Yeah.
I think it comes along, I think, with a lot of these different wirings. You know, you're in a world that just isn't not set up for you. I think it just creates a lot of anxiety, even when you're in the home, even if you're educating in the home, I feel like, because, you know, even when you buy a curriculum, you buy, you know, books, you buy all these different things, and just kind of,
you throw half of it out, because it's like this, or you just save it for your next neurotypical kid, like, because some of this stuff just isn't working. Yeah, it's the tedium of some of it too. Like some subjects are naturally a bit tedious. Like the other thing we've kind of struggled with is grammar. And it's not because Sam won't understand it. He actually has a very like language-oriented brain ever since he was little. Like his first phrase, we were in the like drive-thru for Starbucks and he said like, I want latte. Like he was super verbal. So I don't know, the grammar stuff, like he could mimic anything, like accents, mm-hmm. you know, foreign accents and stuff like that. He's always been a good like mimic, So I know he has this like language-oriented brain, but sometimes the hurdles of boredom for someone with ADHD, they're with certain curriculum, it's insurmountable. You have to like try something else, or you're just gonna get so frustrated. So we've like started to just do our own thing with grammar, and we kind of have fun with it because there's a lot of comics that are grammar oriented and they can teach the concept but through humor. So we use some of that stuff. We have a different grammar book we're using. So yeah, that's been good. But Sam's a really cool kid. He just thinks so much differently. I'll just share this funny, sad but funny story. He recently bought a hamster and he named it Kyle, which is just so funny to me. But so Kyle got sick and Kyle died like pretty quickly. And Sam was like really distraught. I think that anxiety piece, like he feels things big. So like this hamster death was like epic, like one of the biggest, hardest things that I've seen him go through. So he makes great connections, Sam does. He was gonna have this funeral because we're Episcopalian. We have this reading for the death of an animal. And his Sunday school teacher had a funeral for the hamster over Zoom. And Sam was convinced that he was gonna have either a live cremation, like this is his mind, just like inside the mind of Sam, a live cremation of the hamster or a Viking funeral of the hamster. And all the while, the hamster's sitting in our freezer in our garage. But the reason for it is because, well, over here, if you can see our dog, she's right here. She kind of like would have dug it up, he thought. So he had come up with this really creative. I'm telling the Sunday school teacher this, and like the stuff he comes up with is, he's very imaginative. He's awesome. Like he's very funny. It's just, I don't know. He's a pretty cool kid. We've had our struggles, but he keeps us in stitches around here. He's a neat kid.
That's fantastic. It's awesome to have to be able to celebrate that and lift him up, and that's awesome. Molly, thank you so much. I know that there are a number of people in the community who are just starting to face these kinds of challenges, and I know that hearing these stories that we're bringing together will be so helpful and encouraging for them.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you for joining us today. Join Danielle next week as she continues her series on providing for differences. We hope you join Danielle and many of us at the CMI online conference in June. We'll see you next time.